we'll just rub along.
You're listening to CITR 101.9.
Tune in to African Rhythms every Friday from 7:30 to 9 o'clock with your host, David Love Jones, as he plays a heavyweight selection of classics from the past, present, and future. This includes jazz, soul, hip-hop, Afro-Latin, funk, and eclectic Brazilian rhythms.
Lots of people, they take it like a game.
You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name's Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is, as always, a half hour of sketch comedy. It is the White Noise Show, and following it, as always, will be the White Noise After Show. This week, it is, of course, hosted by myself, and I'm joined by special guest Connor Neckleput. Hello, Connor.
Hello, Simon. It's great to have you again.
Oh, it's always lovely to see your face. Thank you very much. anyway, I always like to remind you, you can keep up with us throughout the week on Facebook at White Noise UBC, at Twitter at White Noise UBC. You can check out the best of us at whitenoisecomedy.podbean.com. And of course, for the after show, please, please, please send in your questions to whitenoiseubc@gmail.com. Whatever your question is, it can be a question for me and Connor about anything, really. It could be about the show, about how we do the show, any sort of curiosity you have, or if you just want to, like, comment about the show, tell us what you think, give us some tips, you know, voice your opinion.
Just don't ask us where babies come from.
No, we do have some diagrams, and it's very hard to show them over the radio, but please send in your questions to whitenoiseubc@gmail.com. but without further ado, it's time for some White Noise.
Warning: the following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
Good evening. And welcome to another episode of White Noise. I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's show is brought to you in part by Halloween. It's like Remembrance Day, but the horror is funny. First up tonight, Carl and Neil are back. All right, Carl, you ready to go?
What are we doing again?
We're going to go steal some antiques and sell them to Shifty Sharon.
Is that bird you had the itch from?
Nah, that's Shitty Sharon. Shifty Sharon is the one I gave the itch to.
Oh, well, that explains how I got it. Let's try this house. It's massive.
That's a church, Carl.
Well, won't they have loads of stuff?
Well, yeah, but if we're not already going to hell, I'm pretty sure that's going to push us over the top. No, let's try this manor next door.
How are we going to get in?
See that window? It's unlocked. So climb the drain pipe, go to there, come down the stairs, let me in.
Why me?
Because you're more nimble than me.
Oh, Aw, thanks, Neil. That's the first time you've ever said something nice about me.
Fuck off, Carl, and climb the drainpipe.
Is it so hard as it looks, Neil?
You make everything look hard, Carl.
Oh, I mean...
Great, now come down and let me in.
Okay.
No, come down the stairs, not the drainpipe. Jesus, how is anyone this dumb? I bet I could sell him to science. Oh, there he is. Great, now open the window.
What?
Open it.
With what?
Your hand.
Okay.
I meant using the lock.
Well, how was I to know?
I guess they didn't hear us. Their bedroom must be on the other side of the house.
Have you got a tissue, Neil?
No.
It's just my nose is running and I'm losing a lot of blood.
Do you want me to kiss it better? Just walk it off, Carl.
I'm trying. It's just getting harder and harder to walk.
Oh, stop moaning. Right, you go upstairs, find the oldest thing in the bedroom, and I'm going to go search the living room. Meet me back here in 5 minutes. Where is he?
I'm coming, Neil. It's just a really heavy antique.
What is it?
I think it's a 90-year-old woman.
I don't think they retain their value well, Carl.
Oh, she's waking up.
Is that your death?
Yes. I have come for your soul. But you can keep it if you give me your nicest jewellery.
I haven't got any.
Then just something worth a few, Bob.
That teapot on the mantelpiece was made for me by my grandson. It has a lot of sentimental value.
No, I want something worth cash.
Oh, I see. Well, let me just get my purse out of the drawer.
Much better.
Ah! She's got a gun!
Shit!
Now how about you pair fuck off before I redecorate my living room with you?
But we are dead!
Ooh. Shut up, Carl. Unlucky, lads. Remember, her hands may be cold, but she can still be packing heat. Next up tonight, a man is shopping.
Afternoon, sir. Welcome to Spectacles, Testicles, Wallet and Watch. How may I help you?
I'm looking for a pair of glasses, please.
Excellent. Do you have your prescription?
Oh, no. Sorry, I don't need lenses. I'm not a loser. I just want some frames with normal glass.
So you don't need glasses?
No, I just want to look smarter. That's all.
You can't buy glasses if you don't need them.
Why not?
Because looking smart is the one upside to being blind!
But I have the money, just make a sale.
No! On behalf of all people with sight issues, fuck you! Having sex for us is like always doing it with the lights off! And you want to pretend to be one of us so you can reap the one benefit we have of looking like you actually know what you're talking about!
I'm in a play. I need them for the part.
Oh, so now you're taking jobs away from partially blind people too. Double fuck you.
Oh, forget it. I'm going to watch a movie from the back of the theatre. And then I'm going to go stare at a woman from the opposite side of the train.
Whatever, you four-eyed wannabe.
Rick Perry tried to wear glasses to look smarter during his run for president. What he didn't realise was it wasn't his eyes we had a problem with. It was his mouth. Next up tonight, the ordinary gentlemen are still a man down.
Guys, we can't go on like this.
What do you mean?
We need a fourth bloke in the group.
No, we don't. We're fine as we are.
No, we're not. Arthur was the only one with a car. I'm not getting the bus again. I was nearly gangbanged on the bus today.
Ooh, what's that?
I don't know. Just, no, I'm not going to like it.
Well, how are we going to find a replacement?
We need to have tryouts. Take some CVs, put an ad on Craigslist.
Who's Craig?
He's this bloke who's really good at finding cheap hookers and stolen phones. But he also does legal stuff.
Well, let's meet some candidates then.
So why would you be a good addition to our group?
Well, I'm a good cook, very tidy, and I love going for long walks.
We're not looking for a wife, mate.
I am, though preferably without a penis. However, I'm open to suggestions.
Next.
Right there, mate, I'm Bill. Long time Man United supporter, short time Man City despiser. I like to drink. I like to complain about anyone younger than me.
And you said on your CV you have a car.
Yes, well, I mean, I can get us a car whenever you need.
How's that?
Well, it's easy. You know, you just need to know which wires to touch together.
Next.
Hello, I'm Gladys. I like cock farting, bull farting, penguin farting, and I'm a vegetarian. I also love to drink and drive. Not at the same time, of course. Wouldn't want to spill me pie.
This one won't work, lads.
Why not? She seems all right.
That's the problem. It's a she. Maybe at one point it was a man, but now she's got tits.
So? I've got tits. It's called being 75.
Next.
Hello, I'm Monty. I'm 47 and I have a clean driving record and looking for some mates to hang out with.
He seems all right.
Bit young.
Yeah, he seems a bit thick too.
I can hear you guys talking, you know.
And he answers back.
So how much does this driving job pay?
Next.
Hello, I'm Willis. I'm 79, ex-SAS. I fought in World War II, Korea, the Falklands, and World War III.
World War III? When was that?
I've said too much. Goodbye, gentlemen.
Hello, my name is Arthur. I'm 78, and I'm a ghost.
I thought you looked familiar.
Arthur, my good man. How have you been?
Dead, mainly.
Can you still drive?
No, I'm not a poltergeist. I wasn't paying for those upgrades. That's how they get you.
Well, it was lovely to see you, but we have a lot of people to see.
But it's me, your fearless leader, Arthur.
Yeah, which was great when you could drive, but now you're kind of useless.
What the rest do you bring?
I'm the brains, Ken is the brawn, and Steve is the looks. You were the transport.
Well, sod you then. I'll go up me wife's new toy boy. Let's see him pleasure me wife with me staring in his face.
Well, that's it, guys. That was everyone that answered the advert.
My vote is still for Gladys.
Me too. Well then, I guess I'm outnumbered. It's a good job I'm the brawn then. Who wants to take it outside?
I will.
Oh shit! Hi Gladys! We were just saying how much we would love for you to join our group.
Lovely jubbly. I'll get the next round. Who wants some nuts? Glad to finally see some diversity being shown in that group. I could always tell Ken was a homophobe. Next up tonight is time to return to Family Feudal.
From the people who brought you the newly dead game, The Vice is Right and Hell's Bitchin', is everyone's favorite new reality show, Family Feudal. And here is your host, Lord All the Money.
Good evening, and welcome back to Family Feudal. Tonight, we check in with this season's contestants, the Aldermans and the O'Neills. Last episode, the Aldermans lost father and husband Harry to berry poisoning. Let's see how the mother, Patricia, and her two conjoined sons, Liam and Larry, are doing. Hello, Patricia. How is feudal life treating you?
Well, I'm still alive. That's a plus, I guess. I had a difficult choice to make last week, but I think I made the right decision. I kept Liam, and we ate Larry. Liam seems pretty upset about it. He was sharing Larry's kidney, after all.
How did you get on this week's task?
We tried our best to win, but Liam's head wasn't really in it. You see, part of that was attached to Larry, too.
Are you still glad you took part in our little show?
Yeah, at least everything's organic.
Oh, wow, such denial. It's quite impressive. Let's check in with the O'Neills. Father Eric, mother Karen, and daughter Precious. Hello, O'Neills. How is it going, Eric?
Yeah, it's, going okay.
Karen seems a bit upset.
Yeah, she's just a little sad because of, what happened to Precious yesterday.
Well, she should have known that being caught pickpocketing would result in hanging. It is in the rule book.
Yeah, I really should have read that.
Yes, you should have. Any luck with the farming?
Well, we decided to slaughter some animals the other day, which we managed all right. But it also turned us vegetarian. And the veg we are struggling to grow too. Without pesticides or fertilizer, it's pretty tough.
Well, you owe me half, don't forget.
Well, what's half of fuck all?
Fair enough. That's all we have time for this week. Next week, will the O'Neill survive? Will Patricia eat her only remaining son? Probably, she looks like the type. Tune in to find out in another edition of Family Feudal!
Wow, we do live in a golden age of entertainment. Next up tonight, Elvis and Dolly are back!
Good evening, Elvis, and welcome back, Dolly. How was your vacation?
I was on tour with Kenny Rogers and Kenny Chesney, so it was just awful.
Well, we are glad to have you back. We need you to assist Elvis in mopping up his mess from last week.
Well, that's shocking.
I know. How could someone this handsome make a mistake?
Shut the hell up, Elvis. Your mission this week is to free Rasputin from Russian prison deep in the Siberian wilderness.
We gotta get him out of the gulag?
That's correct.
The gulag? Isn't that a strip bar in Reno?
Probably. It's also what we call the prison labor camps in Russia. These are dark and scary places.
So is that strip bar in Reno.
You will approach the camp by sled dogs, scale the wall, and rescue Rasputin from his solitary confinement.
Sounds like a plan, Stan.
My name is Stuart.
Oh my god, there's two Elvises in here. Here we are, Elvis. Let's saddle up these puppies.
What? You want help with your bra?
The sled dogs, Elvis.
They need help with their bra?
Just stand over there. Yeah, yeah, on, doggies.
You're pretty good at this.
This isn't the first time I've whipped a bunch of men.
What?
How do you think I got my first recording contract? Those boys at EMI are a sick bunch, let me tell you.
You have no idea what Sony made me do.
Well, this is the wall. Rasputin should be on the other side.
All right, well, pass me the winch.
You have it.
No, I brought the Desert Eagle, the knife, and the tuna sandwiches. You're in charge of the winch, the map, and the fruit roll-ups.
Well, how are we going to get over it now?
Stand back. I will use my mighty stature to blow it away. Hey-ya! Oh, God, I think I broke my wrist. Why is my hand facing the wrong way?
Oh, you idiot, stand back. I'm going to do this the quick way. I'll just plant this C4 and run!
Oh!
Rasputin?
Hello?
Are you okay?
I think I just wet myself.
Well, we're here to save you, darling.
Who's we?
Me and Elvis.
Oh, forget it! I'm safer in here than with him!
Oh, don't be so butthurt, Raspy.
Don't call me that!
Whatever, dude. You want to sit here in wet pants freezing to death? Or you want to come on a sleigh ride to freedom? We got fruit roll-ups.
Fine, let's go. If we leave now, we can still catch the last 10 minutes of Family Feudal.
Well done, Elvis and Dolly. You saved one soul. Shame you couldn't have helped the other thousands of prisoners, but whatever. Next up tonight is another Author's Q&A.
Good evening and welcome to Authors on Tour. What goes on tour will eventually be published in a memoir no one asked for. Tonight's panel consists of celebrated nude scene enthusiast George R.R. Martin, presidential candidate and the only person not having sex with Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton. And finally, philosophical powerhouse and author of his new book, Socrates Was the Only Man I Ever Loved. It's Plato. Our first question, please. Yes, you with the face?
Hi, my question is for Mr. Martin. Could you please hurry up and finish the other books?
I could, but then I wouldn't get to enjoy how much taking my sweet time irritates people like you.
Next, you with the muffin top?
Hi, my question is for Plato. When do you think we will see the utopia you describe in The Republic?
Never, never. Didn't you read it? I said get rid of everyone over 10. And then I said only let the clever ones procreate. I was taking the piss. Even the fear of God doesn't stop people shagging.
Next question. You with the fat forehead.
Me?
Yes, you, spawn of Ted Danson.
Hi, my question is for Hillary. What are you going to do to support women as president?
Well, I will be the first woman president.
Yes, but what are you actually going to do for women?
Whatever my speechwriters tell me to say.
Any specifics?
I'm really here to talk about my book.
Next question, you with the ugly sweater and the even uglier face.
Hi, my question is for Plato. Why do you think Socrates was sentenced to death?
Haters are gonna hate.
Next question, you riding the two dragons?
Hi, my question is for George R.R. Martin. Which do you think is better, the books or the TV show of Game of Thrones?
Is she fucking with me?
Next question, you in the back picking your nose?
Hi, my question is for Plato. Did Socrates ever draw any conclusions, or did you make all that stuff up he said?
He might have said that stuff. I don't know. We were always pissed.
That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for coming. Please make your way to the nearest first exit. One of those dragons has set a fire to the curtains. It's about to get more uncomfortable in here than dinner with the Clintons.
Don't meet your heroes, kids. They'll probably just insult you. Last up tonight, someone isn't very well.
Honey, I think I'm sick.
What's wrong?
Everything. I've got a scratchy throat, itchy feet, uncomfortable testicles, shortness of legs. That mole that looked like Jeff Daniels now looks like Jeff Bridges.
Oh, dear.
I've got nausea, diarrhea, diphtheria. I feel inferior. I keep thinking I keep seeing Mother Superior.
Oh, not again. Twice in 1 week.
And I've got indigestion and repression and regression and a weird infestation and the beginning of something between my toes that looks like vegetation.
Maybe you just need to lie down.
No, I don't know. And worst of all, there may be a slight chance that I'm a hypochondriac.
Some people think I'm sick. I tell them what I do on the internet is my business. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, starring the voice talents of Connor Neckleput, Sierra Wiley, Caitlin Docking, Ashley Fallis, Dor Tabby, Dottie Davis and Simon Welton. Music and sound effects by Max Cheers.
All right, there you go. That was the White Noise Show. I hope you enjoyed that. You are listening to the CITR Radio 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory. My name is Simon Welton, and coming up right away after a couple of tracks is, as always, the White Noise After Show, this week hosted by myself and joined by special guest Connor Neckleput. How are you doing again, Connor?
Doing really well. Excited to listen to some banging tracks you might play for us.
Did you enjoy that little bit of sketch comedy? Did you?
It was all right. It was all right. I think, yeah.
You're in half of it.
Bit on the nose. mainly my parts, really. I think the children will like it.
Did you think that explosion was fabulous? I really felt like I put a lot into that explosion.
I have never felt C4 erupt from my body and reach into my soul as much as that explosion did.
I like that description. Yeah, thanks very much. That was exactly what I was going for. It was. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you've achieved your aim.
Oh, he's so kind. All right, we're going to play some music. We're going to come back. We're going to have a chit-chat. Got some big topics to talk about this week. So we'll see you very, very soon.
Hardcore 2015, this Saturday, November 7th. Come on down to the Rickshaw Theater for the greatest night of punk rock Vancouver has seen in years. Canadian punk rock legends DOA and Gob join forces for the first time ever. Your world will be changed and your sorry complacent will be kicked. They will also be joined by the Boyds from Montreal and the sensational Wet Stilettos. Join the fun before DOA takes a hiatus as Joe Keithley works on becoming BC's next premier. Visit www.ticketfly.com for tickets. Concerts and CITR present renowned experimental musician, producer, and DJ Nightmares on Wax with special guest Hubs on Thursday, November 5th at the Alexander Gastown. Doors open at 9, shows at 10, and the show is 19+. Get your tickets today online at timberconcerts.com or at Red Cat, Zulu, or Beat Street Records.
All right, there you go. That was The Weather Station with Loyalty, and before that was Uburu with I Don't Mind. You enjoyed that last one, I noticed.
Yeah, I mean,
you were singing along.
A bit of a sleep at the end, but no, it was a nice show. It was a bit melancholic, but almost sort of easing in a way, very sort of pleasant, sort of mellow. Something I could sort of lean back to in a hammock and sort of contemplate and nostalgize about times past and history and all those sort of beautiful things that have died.
That have died. Yeah, well, that's lovely to hear.
It was a good one. I was very emotional and slightly sleeping.
Brilliant, brilliant.
But that's it, to me. No, but seriously, to me, a good song, a good sort of slow sort of song, if it could put me to sleep, that's actually amazing success. Because I
haven't been many gigs where people pass out and everyone.
Well, yes,
starts
I'm
going,
not.
God,
I'm
that
not,
was the best gig
not
I've
at
went
a gig,
to.
But sort of if I'm sitting at home, right, and I'm listening to some relaxing, sort of easing music, and it can actually, it's so. I can't even really describe it, but because like, to me, if it's clashing, if it's ups and downs, it's crazy. That keeps me. I mean, not. So it keeps me interested, but it keeps my mind from resting.
Yeah,
it's almost put me in a state of tranquility. Which I think is actually a success.
Do you know what's funny though? The only thing I can go to sleep to is I listen to
Sesame Street.
No, it's weirder than that. I listen to Stephen Fry reading Harry Potter, the entire series. And I just listen to them on constant repeat because for some reason I can go to sleep if that's on. Because I don't think about anything then. I just listen to Stephen Fry. Because I can't even listen to other audiobooks. Like, because if someone's accent just irritates me or jars me, it wakes me up. But he just soothes me to sleep every single night.
That's actually beautiful. No, I
think
in all sincerity, that was my
most girlfriends think it's really weird. Really weird.
I also listened to the audiobooks read by Stephen Fry, Harry Potter, when I was younger. Not all of them, but the first few books definitely. And that, yeah, I used to listen to those as I was going to bed as well, actually. And
I know,
yeah,
which
was
great,
was, yeah.
But yeah, I still do it. That's the problem.
Are you kidding? If I was a girl and that happened, and I came over to your place and doing a bit of cuddling, and then suddenly a little bit of, you know, trying to get sleep, whatever, a little bit of Stephen Fry's voice comes over the radio, comes over the audiobook, starts talking about Harry Potter, I would probably lean over and give you a little kiss on the cheek.
Well, that's interesting, because most girls go, can you turn that off, please? No, sorry. It's
part of the package.
It's just one chapter, I promise. All right, let's move on to something a bit more, well, less weird. Okay, so my first question for you tonight, sir. There's been a bit of controversy this year, but I think this is a reoccurring controversy, which is there's always a Halloween costume that someone gets upset about. So this year, the big one was Caitlyn Jenner costumes. People were saying, you know, it's offensive to transsexuals, and therefore you shouldn't do it. But I argue perhaps there is no line when it comes to Halloween costumes in real terms, in that, you know, you could draw lines in the sand in a lot of places, but we're talking about a holiday where people dress up as murderers and, you know, all sorts of horrendous things. So, you know, I think dressing up whatever you want is kind of part of the point of it. And I think you can still criticize someone and think down on them for perhaps choosing what you see as an untasteful costume. But to suggest there should be any ban or there should be a mass shaming, I think is stupid.
I think that I agree with your point. I think, you know, if you go dressed as Conan O'Brien or David Letterman or Johnny Depp or any person living, then you should be able to go as anyone, and if that includes Caitlyn Jenner, then
yeah. Because I mean, I think by being in the celebrity sort of world and being exposing yourself and making a lot of money off it, which she has done, you are open then to imitation in things such as Halloween. And I don't think, you know, and who's to say that someone wearing a Caitlyn Jenner costume perhaps isn't expressing their support for the idea. Like, I went this year not as something I disliked or wanted to make fun of. I went as something that I thought was good or I enjoyed, which was I enjoyed a really good vampire movie called What They Do in the Shadows.
Fantastic,
which is
film.
Hilarious, if you haven't seen it. It's got Jermaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords in it, and he wrote and directed it too. So, yes, please go watch that if you haven't. But anyway, it's about vampires. So I went as a vampire, and perhaps someone might go as Caitlyn Jenner because they thought it was fantastic that she came out and became this icon for the acceptance and the, you know, not just tolerance, but acceptance of people who are transgender, and, you know, it did push this sort of conversation about inclusion and respect for people in a similar situation. So yeah, I don't think it should be banned.
I think it's interesting because I think on the face of it, you know, you have three people dressed up as Caitlyn Jenner. All three of them have different reasons. One person could have satirical or perhaps taunting or intense, and I think that's perhaps a bit that's distasteful. But that's that one individual. So he's probably going to be
something else distasteful anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, if they're going out there and they go, "Oh, look at me, I'm transsexuals," or you know, trying to have a go at them, yeah, people should turn around and say, "Hey, yeah, that's not fair." But if other people, yeah, as exactly as you say, are showing their support for the transsexual community, if they're just going, yeah, as another celebrity, I don't think we should castigate a costume because of what it is. Absolutely, if people are doing it in a distasteful fashion, then you can sort of pull them up and say, hey, you know, that's not appreciated, and maybe they will, maybe they won't change their minds. But I also think that in a way the internet really polarizes things like this, because you take all it takes is one person to tweet one thing with enough followers, someone's known as Caitlyn Jenner, what terrible thing, whether they are actually intimately familiar with this particular person, this particular costume, or whether it's just looking at the street, recognizing the costume and making a judgment, and then that proliferates on the internet, and then the original context in any sort of internet discussion, which can be extend to all corners over any forum, over any community, I think really exacerbates issues like that. And in one way, it really helps to get messages across of people who do have good intentions and do want to critique things and say, well, hey, maybe that's not good taste. I think there's a lot to be to learn from people who will say things like that. But in the case of the specific costume, in the case of making generalizations very broadly, I don't think it's always helpful. And I think, yeah, you're right. I mean, like, why is it absolutely okay to go as a mass murderer or to go as some cruel
villain?
Yeah,
it's almost innate in the Halloween sort of tradition for a shock value to perhaps to your costume. Like, that's, you know, part of the appeal. And maybe it's funny to some people and it's not everyone's taste, but again, that's comedy. And so, you know, it's always subjective. And yeah, maybe don't worry about it so much. maybe this isn't the biggest thing you should get mad about. You should get mad about perhaps, you know, other problems such as incarceration of mass incarceration, homelessness, inequality of income. Like, there's a lot of things to get pissed
candies
about.
Candies being spiked with cannabis.
Right.
There's an article I read about that. I wish I don't think that's happening.
Oh, man, if I had been 12 and that happened, I would have gone to that house again, definitely. All right, let's play another song and we'll come back. This is the lovely Coqueen. Appropriate.
We'll be right back. second Wednesday of the month from 6 to 9 is Women in Career Night at the Bike Kitchen. Bring your bike and give it some love in this safe and positive space for anyone who identifies as female or queer. Come learn how to fix your own bike with the help of a female or queer-identified mechanic and volunteers. Plus, there's free pizza. Visit bikecoop.ca for more information.
There you go. That was the lovely Girls in Trouble with Separate Histories. And before that was, of course, Cokeweed with Dead Man Walking. All right, so we're back in the studio with Connor Neckleput. And my next question for you, if Connor would move his bloody thing so I could see my notes. My next question for you is, Okay, fireworks. We had a big story this week in Vancouver that a house in East Van that the media decided to report as decades old, which it isn't very old. Turns out the house actually was like a century old, which does sound old, but decades old is really the wrong way to explain it.
Decades old and century old. Decades makes it sound
like that's what I mean. It sounded like it was like 20 years old. I was who cares?
So they should have said like an antique home.
Yeah, or you know, exactly.
So you're saying that they underbuild it sort of?
It was just some bad media coverage by CTV. But anyway, in spite of that, yes, a house was burnt down by amateur fireworks displays. So my question is, should fireworks be banned, perhaps? I mean, they don't really serve a purpose to be sold publicly. Of course, professional shows are entertaining for children. I think anyone over 25 who's seen should have seen enough firework displays by now that you can't be that surprised by fireworks. So, I don't know. To me, perhaps, I feel like the safety... I mean, in England, we have a lot of problems every year as well with, like, burns and people putting them through letterboxes.
Just like you can't see them because it's cloudy.
Yeah, exactly. So you can't even see what you're doing anyway. So, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think it's a good idea?
On Halloween, it's going out on the bus.
Yeah,
right in the UBC University Village... in the little green area, some people letting off fireworks. Really loud. I'm sure there's some people down there who, maybe they might be older, might be at home. Don't really want to hear that. I didn't see the fireworks, but I can't imagine that they were, as you said, like, particularly grand. Comparing that to the Festival of the Lights, which they do down in English Bay, which is fantastic. Amazing firework display. I'm inclined to agree because they're not that spectacular. You might go, oh, firework, but it's a bit of a novelty. Yeah, you've seen them before. A couple fireworks, one after another, isn't inspiring.
Quite. And I mean, not being funny, but the amount of noise that goes on through October, because we have this like weird sort of month where you can buy fireworks and that's it. So you just see this constant fireworks sales. And it honestly sounds like we're living in, like, a war zone. It sounds like we're living in Syria at the moment, really. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Or South London.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't know there was quite so many explosions there. I think it's
stabbings. All those terrorists in London, Ontario, just...
Oh, God, we're going to get
so many of them. We need a lot more tighter security.
We're going to get some complaints now. It's okay. It'd be nice to hear from someone.
We're very lonely.
So, my next question for you... we talked about Plato in this one, and Plato dismissed the question in the show, an inquiry into whether Plato's Republic is possible, if it would ever exist. So my question to you is, what do you think? Do you think we could have... Have you read The Republic?
No. Oh, I know. I mean, the idea of utopia as... perpetuated by other writers.
Yeah, okay, let's just go... All right, I'll keep it more general then, and maybe that will help us not have to explain the entire of the Republic. But basically, his idea is, yes, a utopian society where, like, intellectuals and philosophers are leading, and people are basically put... People who show promise in areas are put into those jobs. So if you're born and you're, you know, as a child, you appear philosophical, which seems a bit of a weird thing to suggest that, like...
if you're born with a pipe in your mouth...
if he looks good in a jacket with, like, patches on it,
no. Maybe he'd be a model.
A philosophy model, yeah. That sort of thing, so that you put people into the right jobs and you kind of control... Procreation sort of is one of the concepts.
That one of the basic concepts of humanity is that we can control procreation. Bit of a man thing, to be honest.
But I think it is a thing that we should be conscious of in what is quickly becoming a very overpopulated world. And I'm not talking about land. I just mean in terms of how much damage and pollution our species does because of the sheer mass of us. We do, you know. So adding to that is only going to exacerbate these effects of global warming and resource being destroyed by our usage. So, yeah, I don't know. Do you think a utopia is possible, or is it shot in the dark?
Nah, I think there are definitely there are examples to follow. I think every country, every culture is different. But you look at Scandinavia, you think they've done some good job. I mean, it's not perfect up there, not by any means. They have their own problems for sure. In many ways, you'd argue America's a success, Canada's a success. Depends on what measurements you're using. Certainly, there's a lot of people in both those countries who are very poor, or impoverished. almost in comparison with those who live in India or other overpopulated and impoverished places. But I think there are many ways we can improve the world. But the idea of a perfect utopia, I think, resides on the fact that it resides on zero conflict to me. The moment there is any kind of conflict of interest between any two individuals, that is what lets society down. When people...
I think there can be conflict, but what there has to be is the expectation of compromise on top of that, which is you can have your point and you can have your feelings, but you have to try and see eye to eye and try and come up with a solution.
But that's the thing, because you said, yeah, absolutely try. I absolutely agree. You should definitely try, but people don't...
But you're talking about there's 10% of people, I think, that are... Because if you do actual, tests for people, where do you go on the political spectrum, most people end up either side of the centre, generally, especially in Canada. There are some people out on the very margins, your Marxists and your sort of, you know...
Cowboys.
and your Albertans. But in general, most of us are somewhere in the middle. And what that says is that most of us, i.e. like 80-odd% of us, would probably be happy with a compromise solution in somewhere in the middle. We might not be delighted, but we wouldn't, you know, feel like it was a travesty. And if we can start working in that area, in this, what, you know, because democracy is not about what doing what everyone agrees with. It's what the majority rules. That's what it is. So the majority is actually probably in agreement on a lot of things. And people just need to realize that. I mean, the gridlock in America in the Senate is all about the fact that you have 50 states which each are allowed 2 representatives. But what that gives is an unproportional representation to the states with low amounts of people in it, because California, which has 10% of America's population, has 2 seats in the Senate, and then so does places like Wyoming, which probably has, you know, less than 1 million. So what you end up then is certain parts of the country are actually overrepresented. And on top of that, at the moment, what you've got from that then is people winning in those states who are, you know, on the really far extremes of ideology. And then you end up with nothing being done because we can't go anywhere near the middle because we're so, you know. But I wouldn't say that the people on the left at the moment in those situations are actually that far off the center line from where people were 10 years ago. You know, I just think that there's, you know, it's ridiculous. But I think in Canada, 80% of us are in that, you know, central political ideology and therefore would be happy with common sense compromises on a lot of issues.
I think, yeah, so absolutely right. Obviously, the House of Representatives in America does make up for the population fact. You could argue perhaps the Senate is a useless institution. Yeah, you probably could argue that. but actually, so what I was getting with my previous resentment was actually human nature, human condition, not democracy as you did, but just when people have conflict and they... Because people are
No, okay, I know what you're going to say. Yeah, I know exactly what you're going to say, because you're giving the human nature idea of Hobbesian survival of the fittest. You're saying that we're competing for resources and therefore there is less compromise. Is that what you're going to get?
Well, no, because I don't want to be framed as a Hobbesian, because I don't think that everything's anarchic and we're all bastards. Okay. I think that in life...
But you think we're self-serving, though, I think.
Yes. Okay. I think there are a lot of people who are absolutely they'd compromise, but all it takes is one person who's not willing, and, you know, it's like those funny court cases, right? We have someone who's clearly kind of playing on some sort of, like, technicality of the law to get what they want, and then you had this kind of, well, should we uphold the laws it says, or is it in the spirit of the law? And it was with anything. I mean, like, for instance, you have 2 people who were interested in the same girl or whatever, or 2 people interested in the same partner. You can't compromise on that necessarily. I mean, maybe in some future...
Yeah, but we're talking about politics. We're not talking about relationships.
Well, I didn't realize that at the very beginning. I just thought sort of utopia. but in the end, I mean, what is a utopia? It's built on people. So the people need to be eye to eye, need to be almost homogenous in the way that they...
Well, and that's something Plato suggests is that, and a lot of dictators have done, is you start with education and you start by changing the outlook on everyone. And they thought that you could breed a sort of... And this is what I would get at, not in their way of literally just thinking that... Because their idea literally was get rid of everyone over 10, because everyone under 10 doesn't have a preset belief and ideology on philosophy and politics, so we can shape them to believe our idea of sort of a utopian society of commonwealth. But what I think is that what you could do is start to breed the opposite of the Hobbesian idea, which is you start with a mothering perspective. I don't like that word because it is commonly called the mothering perspective, but I would call it the care perspective, which is a true idea, I think, of humanity. Because people believe that humans, like Hobbes believes that humans are naturally competitive and violent towards each other, and will, you know, the nature of things is brutish and nasty, and it's only that we sign this contract of security between ourselves that we don't all kill each other.
Wait, when did I sign that contract?
Well, that's one big question about it. But my thought on that is, but no, because what really is the beginning of man is originally the family, which is that is the first social group that you graduate from. It's what you're born into, and man doesn't exist, or humans don't exist as a society before that they're a family. So you start with a family, and the family is requiring a caring, codependent relationship of everybody involved for the survival of everyone. And that's where we began, as all animals do. All animals have this similar thing. You know, maybe some don't. Some have, you know, weirder, you know, different ideas. But anyway, in general, this is how the dynamic is. So you start with that, and then you build into like a village sort of setting.
A pod or a tribe.
Yeah, a
or
group
sort of
or tribe.
Group.
Yeah, and with that, you then start to care about people in the group, and you have personal relationships with them. And then somehow, we just seem to lose sense of this once we get to the size of feeling insignificant or not having a personal relationship with every single person. We suddenly forget the nature of people, because all those people that are close to us, they may have their faults, but for the most part, most of them, we believe are good people down.
I mean, get along with.
Yeah, you know, we can, even if they irritate us, we still put up with them and deal with them. But yeah, we get to this like level of city or a level where we don't know everybody and we lose faith in humanity. And I don't see any damn good reason for that. Yes, but you know, the only reason I see that is because suspicion and doubt and fear is put in because we don't know them personally. But I don't think that's a good starting point for assuming that then everybody has these evil self-interests. Because, I mean, the amount of humanity you see in society, you know, even in a big city like Vancouver, someone falls over, 9 people are going to try and pick them up, usually if it's a crowd. You know, if someone drops something, people point it out for them. It, you know, I don't see this, you know, selfishness often. You see it sometimes, and it sticks with you because painful emotions, somehow do stick with you in the short term sometimes, stronger, and they come back to you more than positive memories do. Or at least I think they sort of stick in your mind a little bit. I mean,
it's fear, isn't it? I think we begin on a base level of contentedness, and those amazing times, those fun times, they're good. But the bad times, ultimately...
They're as educational as the good times, and therefore they are reinforced. But I don't know. It does, you know, when something bad happens to you, you generally do tell more people than when something good happens to you.
Mm-hmm.
Though depending on your mood. I guess if you're in a good mood and something good's happened, you might ride that for a while. But that's usually if it's spectacular.
Yeah.
If it's just something simple like someone doing you a favor on the bus, you'd forget about it in 5 minutes. But if someone, you know, gets in your way and is rude about it, then you're gonna remember that for a while. So, but you know, we've digressed quite a lot. But yeah, you know, I mean, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think my idea of human nature is wrong?
No, I don't think it's wrong. Not at all. I think, yeah, I absolutely think we should try to encourage future generations and ourselves to be cognizant and respectful of everyone, regardless of race, religion, class, all those socially constructed sort of cleavages. In a way, I don't think... Yeah, you're right. It's the familiarity. So you're right. The family, And then the small community, and then as it gets bigger and bigger. And so once you know someone and you have a personal connection with them, there's a familiarity. That's how things like the UN sort of really work together, because they breed a sense of...
Does it work?
How many wars have there, interstate wars have there been since World War II? Not many. Interstate wars with foreign influences, definitely, for sure, and lots of interstate conflicts in places that were just...
Yeah, but that could arguably be just as... sort of caused by Cold War fear as well, which is if everyone's allied to one of the superpowers, that's going to stop intercontinental sort of or inter-country conflict, surely.
Well, yeah, but also, I mean, it's a combination of things. Globalization as well. I mean, by attacking someone, you're very well perhaps damaging yourself. It's almost easier just to go because of the way the economy works.
Well, yeah, I would say that economic constraints, especially post Cold War, sort of, you know, post 1990. Are more effective now as a means, but that's usually a retaliation for conflict. I wouldn't, you know, it's, you know, like, for example, when Russia went into the Ukraine a couple of years, is it last year or the year before?
It was last year. Yeah.
Last year, you know, that was the response, because yeah, that has an effect, and it's interesting because it's still going on, and they're just sort of pretending things aren't as bad as they are. And
oh, well, I mean, there's more interesting news, like that plane crash that happened yesterday.
Well, that's interesting, yeah. I mean, that's one thing to say about that. Like, for the Russian government, that's a great distraction from problems they're having, because that's something they're all going to, you know, they'll mourn about that for a long time now, and as they should. It's a tragedy. But, you know, we're still waiting to find out the details, so we can't really say what's going on there. Fortunately, it's 12:05, mate.
Is it actually?
Yeah, it is 12:05. We'll hang about for a bit. We're going to play some more songs. We might have a bit more chat. The next song we're going to play for you is actually by a band who we played before. But the reason I'm playing it this week is they are back in town next Tuesday. They're playing a show in town. That band's Twin River, and the track's called Bend to Break. So we're gonna play that for you now, and then we'll come back. And yeah, we'll play a couple of songs and we'll be back. So see you soon.
To the time that I was
UBC Learning Exchange Trek program wants you to get involved in your community. Learn about important social issues while volunteering at inner-city schools or nonprofit organizations. You'll also get to meet other UBC students in a fun and supportive environment.
See how your talent and skills can make a difference in your community. Participate throughout the term or during Reading Week. Check out www.learningexchange.ubc.ca/CITR to find out more.
Shine On is an eclectic mix of the latest, greatest tunes from the Vancouver Underground and beyond, connected through a different theme each week. Join me, your host Shay, every Tuesday from 1 to 2 p.m. for a groovy musical experience.
Hello, hello, hello. Yeah, we're back. So that was Twin River on before with Ben to break, and they are coming next week playing the Fox Cabaret on Tuesday, so go check them out. I'm sure it'll be a good show. All right, so we've got what we're going to talk. One more question we decided before we go, and this question is basically: we give rights to humans because they are sentient beings and feel pain and suffering and are all alike and therefore deserve the same rights to a good, healthy, and profitable life. So, arguably, if animals are just as sentient beings, they feel things like we do, they feel pain, they suffer, they enjoy the outdoors as much as we do, they enjoy the fresh air and good food, so why aren't they given the same rights as humans in terms of, you know, the right to a natural life that is healthy for them? Why do you think we should do that? Should we adopt speciesism? It's Peter Singer is one of the main philosophers who talks about this and lectures currently about it. And he's obviously pro speciesism, as they call it. So what about you, Connor?
Well, I think when you have things like racial divides, ethnic divides, religious or language divides, and we've began to overcome them. And over history, across history, there have been examples of people breaking those socially constructed divides, but also using them to their own benefit in twisted ways. And so the leap then is, so what's the difference between racism and imagine that there's a difference between two people because of the color of someone's skin versus, as you just said, the difference between two animals because of perhaps supposed levels of sentience
just to play devil's advocate, perhaps one argument is they don't have the same development of prefrontal cortex abilities as us, so their higher function and sort of ability to be conscious of what is happening perhaps isn't as developed, so therefore they don't even know that they are being abused, would be one argument. But I have my own sort of comeback to that, which is, have you ever heard a truck of pigs going towards a slaughterhouse? They freaking know what is about to happen. I don't know if they can smell it or they can feel it, but they clearly have perception beyond what we perhaps give them credit for. And animals run away from all sorts of danger in the wild.
Dogs sense changes in human behavior.
A dog can tell when if you have a good pet, they can sort of sense what's going on with you. Yeah. And you can sense what's going on in them. You can tell when they're distressed, when they are in pain. And that, you know, there's something to it.
So, yeah, I am pro... I'd be pro species, but I'm very much pro the idea of encouraging benevolence and a shared appreciation for other animals that haven't developed as much as we have, perhaps because, as you mentioned, prefrontal cortexes. And I think one of the main divides as well is that we still don't understand them. In the world we know, especially in the modern world where everything's globalized and ideas are becoming more uniform across the world and we're learning about past ideas and developing new ones, it doesn't take a lot of effort, potentially, for two people across the world to come and say, to have an idea and go, yeah, we both agree on that, you know, like murder is
bad. But this is an interesting point then, which is what we're suggesting isn't a cross-cultural idea. It isn't something that arguably would be accepted in certain countries. I mean, there are vegetarian countries countries that for the most part are vegetarian, but usually that isn't by choice. It's by lack of resources and unavailability of it. But there are certain cultures probably who revere eating meat, or, you know, like even American culture, I think, you know, there's a lot of meat eating there. I mean, but again, that's maybe a polarized thing there, and that, you know, it's a silly generalization because, you know, vegetarianism has its strongholds, I'm sure, in certain cities.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, so, I mean, because, I mean, a big argument for it is of course, it's a climate change thing, which is beef costs so much energy to produce, to create that food for you to eat compared to vegetables. Like, it's obscene, and how much methane is produced by herds of cows. So it would be really good for the environment if we stopped eating beef, at least. You know, even, like, poultry is nowhere near as bad for the environment.
Yeah. So yeah, it's, I mean, as an omnivore myself, I struggle sometimes with the guilt of eating animals and knowing that, you know, they've been born, raised and slaughtered for my consumption. So unfortunately I'm just not radical enough to change my diet yet. But I like to see game reserves where animals are given space, and that probably sounds a bit critical. Like, so why can, you know, lions have their own reserves where they're protected, but yeah, cows can't?
Yeah, I mean, I find that bizarre how we can pick and choose, where people can get outraged about certain animals and other animals that aren't cute. People struggle with. I think you've got to go one way or the other, which is you either believe all animals deserve dignity or you're okay with it.
And I think that comes down to, because obviously, you have game reserves. You have a certain allocation of space for particular ecosystems, particular animals. But the reason I think that we wouldn't see, and I can't really foresee happening in the future, is like just having animals wandering around anywhere. But we're always going to put perimeters around them.
Well, we did that for humans.
Exactly. I mean, like, well, we're just as likely to kill them. But I think there is a fear because of perhaps the lack of development and their lack of, at least as we understand it, at least. I don't know what the latest research into animal behavior is, but we consider more primitive, and they're more likely to eat us or to go and harm us. Some animals, not all of them. And so as a human species, we can't allow that, and so we're always going to fence them in. Mm. I mean, I would love to see more territory set aside for the reservation and to the protection of the environment and the ecosystems and those animals involved. And I think in many regards, a lot of animals aren't given enough credit for the emotional intelligence and the cognizance that they actually do possess. But it is interesting. So, yeah, so what is the difference between a man killing another man versus a lion killing a man? Potentially the lion's getting food. Potentially it's defending its territory. The other man could be out on revenge, could be an accident, could be, protecting their territory. So are they that different? Some ways yes, some ways no.
Difference is we can communicate the morality with the human. And that's why you can't expect the same sort of behavior from a lion.
And to me, that's what sort of makes it, in a way. Leaving aside the slaughterhouse aspect of how we treat other animals, but it's the inability for us, at least at this time, to comprehend and communicate with animals in a way that we can with other humans. Again, perhaps because of cranial developments that Homo sapiens have gone through, that allows us to be able to reasonably. And obviously, there's times and places in history where we've gone barbaric and we've slaughtered each other and we've used terrible weapons and tortures. So by no means is every human in history an entirely moral being, but we have a better reliance on ourselves being able to solve issues and be able to communicate morality and just communicate at all than we do with some animals. Obviously, dogs are, and maybe you can argue even some dolphins and some cats.
So what's your solution then?
Yeah, well, that's my problem is I don't really have. So I want there to be a lot more. I despise animal cruelty. Again, hypocrite though. I mean, I'm eating beef and chicken. I'm eating based on cruelty on the slaughterhouses. So, I don't have a good solution because I unfortunately live in a hypocritical equilibrium on the stance. Yeah, but I just wish that in many ways, something at least there are more efforts to. I read an article recently saying they're going to try. Beginning to be able to grow like hamburgers are using like just stem cells yeah. or like if that could be, if you could just take a small cell and be able to reproduce that for a cheap price, tastes as good as what it is. I mean, health benefits withstanding. If we could do that, that'd be amazing. I would immediately switch over to like this kind of somewhat more artificial.
I would get. I'd give it 5 years. Oh, see if anyone goes a bit
well,
weird.
Well, I want the price to get at a certain level.
Yeah, that too. That too.
But that level, then I would be very much more engaged. Anyway, maybe it's just the way I was raised. Maybe.
But they're also you can buy like there's a great place in Vancouver called Vegan Pizza, and they do a kick-ass chicken donair, which has never seen a chicken in its life. And I actually went in there the first time. I was like, oh, vegan pizza, but they got chicken donairs. I'll have a chicken donair. I ate it. I'm like, that's really good chicken.
So wait, so you went into the vegan place and chose the item which you thought yeah. was chicken.
I only went in there because it was the nearest place to my house, basically. So I went in and I ordered the chicken. And then I went back up and went, mate, like, why are you serving chicken? It doesn't make any sense. He's like, no, it's not real chicken. It's some Thai recipe. And I was like, yeah, that is the best pretend chicken I've ever had. So it can be done, sir, I think. All right, I think we should leave it there.
Although my concluding remarks...
Okay,
be, I, think,
so I apologize.
Just try
go on.
Settle
just,
something.
Just tie it up nicely but for us at the end of the show. No pressure.
Bow is I hate animals. No, but I think, yeah, it's down to the level of which communication and how we hold animals to our own supposedly moral standards and the fact that we just can't do that at this point is really kind of key.
Which is why we can get away with it
yeah,
still?
Yeah, but essentially it is. But my own son's, I don't like, again, like, I mean, as hypocritical as it sounds, eating meat. I dislike the idea immensely of hunting or cruelty to animals inflicted in sort of senses where there are people going out of the way to do. Obviously, again, yeah, I mean, you can pull arguments and say, like, well, slaughterhouses are just as much out of the way, out of the norm to fulfill, but people going out of the way to hurt animals, to distinguish them as inferior, I don't like that idea. I think that's it doesn't respect the sense of what an animal really is compared to what we are, because we are just animals.
Well, yeah, and I don't think the majority of people are violent towards yeah. animals, because it's kind of a sign of a psychopath when you don't have any, you know, I mean, or even babies are born innately with a sense of sort of like caring and you know, if you see one, like they did an experiment where one puppet was sort of mean to another puppet, and then the child who would be 3 to 6 months old would go towards the nicer puppet. Like, you know, people are innately going, hopefully, if they're, you know, not on wired the wrong way, they're gonna be nice to animals.
Interestingly enough, there's another experiment called the Bobadil experiment where I think
children
were exposed to a couple of scenarios, one of which was an adult beating up like a Bobo doll, so that's not hurting it, but still represents another.
It's like
being
a plastic doll that you like can hit and it bounces back.
Yeah, I think the experiment did sort of show that. So after being exposed to that, some kids put in the same room with this Bobo doll did begin to beat up on it a little bit. There are holes you can pick in that sort of research.
Yeah, I mean, and that's like, you know, operation. Is it operant learning? Or I forget. What
I don't know
that.
What the term would be. But yeah. And so yeah, but it's funny. I mean, yeah, in certain situations, and again, maybe depending on the age and the cognizance and the development of a child, they might be more inclined to following the standards and norms set by their elders. But on the other hand, I'd agree. I think actually, children do actually have at the very beginning, certainly have a desire to share and to care, as you sort of said.
Well, yeah, and always we in psychology, they always say that basically everything has three aspects, which is sort of genes, environment, and what's the third one? So it's like, I forget what it is now. It's like psychology, social,
nature.
And
like genetics or...
Well, genetics is one of them, and then you have environment, but I think they sort of break environment basically into two parts. But yeah, the idea
like
is...
Well, behavior and like sort of static or...
Yeah, I can't remember now. Okay. But yeah, anyway, it's only my minor. But anyway, all right, we're going to leave it there. We're going to play two more songs. So the two you're going to hear are by an artist called... next one is Youth Worship with Eternal Scene. Then after that, we're going to play Dilly Dally with Desire. But we will be back next week at our usual time of 11 p.m. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming in today, Connor.
Always a pleasure, Simon. Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you too. So yeah, we will be back next week at 11 Wednesday with a brand new half-hour sketch comedy. And then, as always, the White Noise Boys After Show. So hopefully we'll see you then, which we won't. And I always say that, and we're not going to see them, we're not going to hear them, because it's the radio, and that's not how it works. So please tune in to us.
Let us know if you'd like to see us by emailing whitenoise@gmail.com.
whitenoiseubc@gmail.com. Good night.
Finding us on Twitter.
If you must.
Good night.